Hello everyone, I am Mirta Hurtado Rivas. No VIPs or rock stars, just simple people sharing their life stories to trigger discussions around important topics, or simply to inspire us to embrace challenges ourselves. Welcome to Leaderching.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Leaderching. My guest today comes from Canada. And so, welcome, David.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, David Lipkus is partner at Kestenberg Siegel Lipkus LLP and is based in Toronto. So, David, thanks so much for accepting my invite to be my guest today. How are things in Canada?
Everything is very good. Obviously, that's a loaded question because we're in the middle of COVID. And so right now in Canada, we happen to be participating in a stay-at-home order during a lockdown. So the numbers are not where they should be, unfortunately. So it's good in my personal life. Unfortunately, around the world in Canada, it's not so good. So we're all doing our part to try and avoid spreading the disease. And so we're hoping that we're here shortly.
Yeah, that sounds similar to the situation in Switzerland, where we also are hoping to get to a better place. Even for our little country, this pandemic has been a real challenge. So similarly to you, I think I'm doing well myself and professionally it's going well, but it is a bit unsettling to still be in the pandemic even after over a year. But let's dive directly into, you know, the questions that I have for you. And my first question is, I would like to know, what did you dream of becoming when you were a child?
I'm glad you asked me that because I had two very big dreams growing up. The first dream that I had is that I really wanted to be a baseball player. And when I was much younger, I played baseball competitively and I loved every minute of it. And I, for whatever reason, I thought I was very good at playing baseball. And unfortunately, when I was 13 years old, I had the choice. I could choose to spend my summers with my friends at camp, or I could choose to make a strong commitment to the baseball team, not see my friends at camp during the summer, and continue on with baseball. And so my dad and my mom gave me the choice. They said, you choose, it's your life. Do you want to play baseball or do you want to go to summer camp with your friends? And I chose, as a 13-year-old boy, to go to summer camp with my friends. And later on in life, now that I have kids, of course, I asked my dad, I said, why didn't you want me to play baseball? Because there was obviously a talent there that maybe I could have done something with it. And he said, oh, don't worry, you weren't that good anyways.
Okay, so kind of a reality check from parents' side.
Exactly. And in addition, I also grew up when I was very young. Like most young boys, I idolized my dad growing up and he was a lawyer. And so I thought, well, I'm going to be a lawyer too. And so my dream ended up going with option B instead of option A. And I think given that I'm, you know, under 6 feet tall and I'm not an athlete that I think would be in a position to make the major leagues, that I made the right choice.
Excellent. So your choice, you know, kind of your dream has become true. And then you were inspired by your father, which is interesting because I think many lawyers have had some kind of inspiration in their environment or family. It was similar for me, even though for me it was different. So my father was a lawyer, a judge and law professor, but I absolutely wanted to do something different. But I still ended up being a lawyer. And same for my sister. She also wanted to do something different. We still ended up being lawyers. So kind of weird because we kind of wanted to do the opposite, just to not be in the same field. And then we still kind of, you know, life drove us to law at the end. So it's really interesting how it can play a role.
I'll tell you two funny stories. Number one about myself and my dreams. And then number two, my brother, who was similar to you, where he never wanted to go into law. So my brother ended up taking a minor in chemistry and he was top of his class. He got his MBA degree and he thought, I'm never going to be a lawyer. He was going to go on to achieve success in other things. While he was in business school and graduate school, he decided maybe I'm going to get a law degree too. And he ended up getting a law degree as well. And now he is a patent litigator, which is Wow. obviously a very successful lawyer at a big firm in Toronto. And so he chose the route of fighting becoming a lawyer, and it ended up succumbing later in life. Whereas I have always wanted to be a lawyer. And my earliest memories, even when I'm 12 years old, I watched my dad. I would go to the office with him on the weekends to spend time with him. I would hear him on the telephone when he was talking to clients and talking to lawyers on the other side. And I thought, wow, if he could do it, I'm smarter than him. Maybe I can do it too.
So what I like about your story, and thanks for sharing that, so, you know, is that you saw in your father certain characteristics, certain aspects of him that you believed were kind of good things, right? Things that you wanted to also achieve. And those are things probably that we then also try to grow during our personal development, and also things that we kind of like when we work with others, right? And here I'm going a little bit into the field. I would like to know from you if certain of those characteristics that you saw in your father at the time, if you have kind of find parallels with your mentors or managers, leaders that you have come across now during your career as a lawyer.
Absolutely. And the best example I could think of today, there's a couple. Number one will be kindness, which we'll talk about. And number two is being authentic. But I want to get touch into kindness momentarily, because I have two kids of my own. I mentioned an 8-year-old and my daughter turned 6 this year. And my wife, most importantly, we try so hard to teach our kids about kindness. And so I noticed from my father and from the mentors and leaders that I follow that it's very easy to be kind, but not everyone, for whatever reason, is always kind. And so as I'm trying to teach those types of lessons to my children, because I know how important it is in the grand scheme of life, I think back to, number one, to your question, but also to my life growing up. And my dad was kind to everybody. And the best example I could think of, because I've been very fortunate that my father is one of the leaders that I learned from, and we were late for a meeting. It was an INTA meeting, and we were late, and we were rushing to get through the hotel. And all of a sudden, there was an elderly person that required assistance to get through the door. And everyone, as you know, is walking right by them. And my dad stopped, and he took 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and he helped the person through to get that person to where they need to go. This came at a detriment to my dad. We were late for the meeting. And mm-hmm. he said, and I asked him, I said, why would you stop and spend so much time? You know, we could have got them support from someone else and we could have dealt with it a different way. And he said, that's not the type of person I want to be. If my client's going to be mad at me for being late for a meeting, then I don't want to work for that client. And it taught me at such an early age how, number one, how easy it is to be kind and help people. And number two, how that's way more important than everything else that we do. Because the truth is, especially with COVID, we don't know what everyone else is going through outside the scope of what they're presenting to us. But it's easy to be kind. And so I learned very early on, that's one example of obviously many, many examples growing up, but it just highlights the importance of, number one, how easy it is. And number two, it really speaks to the truth of who we are. We're all people. We're all in this together. And so that's why I think that's what I want my children to do as well. I want them to see that I don't care if it's the doorman at a hotel mm-hmm. or if it's the most important, yeah. valuable CEO of the potentially biggest client you'll ever receive. You treat them all the same. Mm-hmm. And that to me is one of the most important characteristics I think that I find in leaders that I want to follow, and most importantly, obviously, the leaders I want my children to be. And so that's really what I wanted to say.
That's really interesting, David. And maybe for our listeners, I would recommend that there was in the latest HBR edition magazine that came out not long ago, there was an entire article about kindness and how kindness in the workplace can really be, can make a difference. So I would, you know, beside listening to this podcast, you know, go to HBR and read that article for those that are listening. I would like to pause here a second because I think it's extremely important what you're saying. Because for me, kindness then is the basis for a lot of the other values that sometimes we are looking for in leaders. And to me, and you just mentioned, right, the fact that if we learn that being kind doesn't make a difference with respect to social background, respect to gender, to color, to religion, but that kindness is just your kind of basic mindset, that that's what drives you, be it professionally to have success, right, and to achieve monetary, you know, good things happening to you, but also just in your interactions with other human beings, right, showing respect, listening truthfully, not only, you know, listening to get confirmation of what you were saying, but listening to hear from others, see different perspectives. I think that if we really get to the place where we interact with others based on kindness, all of those other things like, you know, good communication, respect, being kind of listening and being eager to have someone else's input, being diverse and inclusive, to me, it somehow resonates as one of the values and one of the behaviors that we should kind of display constantly. I must admit that when you said kindness is easy, I was really struggling internally in my head, because I must admit, it's not always easy for me to be kind, especially when you're confronted with situations where you are experiencing disrespect towards yourself. And it's sometimes really hard for me to not kind of reciprocate with the same type of disrespect or harshness, or, you know, even to give just back a direct comment. And I always have to step back a little for myself, you know, just watch myself like this little monkey that I have on my shoulder, and the monkey is, you know, fight back, do it, you know, don't let yourself be, you know, walk over. And I'm like, no, I need to kind of go to the better place, right? To I can go out of that confrontation with a sense that I tried my best, and not just that I wanted the other one to hear me out and to, you know, and to get a clear message that I was very unhappy about that. So the easy part, once you gave the example, then it became very clear as to what you meant. And I think that if we practice it on the things that are easier, then I think it makes us also more comfortable in those moments where it's a bit less easy to do. What's your experience there?
No, I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm going to add a caveat to my kindness is easy as follows. As you know, in the anti-counterfeiting space, we do work with a lot of bad people selling counterfeit. We do work with criminals. We do work where sometimes it can be very difficult to be nice. And rest assured that there are times when it's not appropriate to be practicing kindness. And there are times where you have to be stern, and maybe you even have to raise your voice in certain circumstances to get your point across. And that's not kind to do. And so there are circumstances where I think it falls outside the scope of, obviously, kindness is easy. What the reason I say it is because no one's forcing you to yell. No one's forcing you to be rude. When I say kindness is easy, I mean, it's free, right? Everyone can do it. You don't, if you're thinking, and you mentioned being thoughtful, if you're automatically, almost if it's innate, where you don't have to think about it, and if you just practice listening either to the devil on your head or the angel or whatever it is, but if you know that 9 times out of 10, it's always appropriate to be kind, then in whatever you're dealing with, in whatever life situation, I think you'll be better off for wanting to err on the side of being kind. And I've seen leaders, for example, that are unkind in situations where it's easy to be kind. And what I'm talking about as kindness is easy is snap your finger, flip the script. In certain circumstances, when you're being a mentor or when you're talking to an employee, practice kindness. It will get you so much further in that specific situation. So that's what I meant when I said kindness is easy. But rest assured, I'm not always kind.
No, and that makes a lot of sense, because I think just when you taking the example of speaking to our associates, you know, or employees, I think one of the things that kindness also triggers is that with time you start building trust. And trust, yes, on the other hand, is so important to kind of having a good relationship, right? A good working relationship where there is these interactions that, irrespective of your level, again, going back to the backgrounds, are not so important. If the kindness is there, then trust will grow out of it, and then you will have just better results because people feel they're trusted, you trust them, and vice versa. Excellent. Thank you so much for sharing it, and especially for letting us know that you also can be, you know, the big fighter when it comes to our common enemies, the counterfeiters, which I never doubted, actually, because I know that you're so passionate about that topic. But you mentioned authenticity, and I'm really eager to hear what your thoughts are about that.
Oh, I'm glad that we're going to move into that area, because it's such an important area to me. And I have, obviously, I do a lot of mentoring. For example, through our IP Association in Canada, there's a mentorship program where I'm mentoring junior lawyers. And obviously in my own workplace, there's mentorship there. And one of the first pieces of advice that I always give to my employees and to anyone that I'm mentoring is to be authentic. And they always ask what I mean. Mm-hmm. And I explain to them, because, for example, they may be going for a job interview and they may be trying to put up, I don't want to say putting up a wall, but what I'm trying to articulate is that they want to put the best version of themselves out there for the employer to see, which is obviously important in any job interview. But I tell them to just be themselves. And the reason it's so important is because if you're yourself and you don't get the job, that's okay. You're not going to get every job that you apply for. But if you're true to yourself and you actually show the employer of the type of employee that you are, the person that you are, then if you end up being selected for the position, the job will be so much easier for you because you don't have to put up a front or pretend to be something you're not. And I've been very fortunate in life that I can't hide my authenticity. I am the way I am, and I'm unapologetically so. And the truth is, what I want everyone, all the listeners, and what I want everyone that I'm mentoring to know is that you're always better off being yourself in every situation, whether you get the job or don't get the job. And I think people fail to realize that most of the time, employers in job interviews, they're just trying to see if the person fits the mold. Is this someone I want to work with, for example? It's not about the skills. There are lots of skillful lawyers out there. There are lots of skillful employees out there. The reality is, it a lot of the times comes down to, do I see myself, for example, going out socially with this person? And when I say socially, I mean going for drinks or going for a coffee. Is this the type of person I want to spend so much time with? The truth is, pre-COVID, you spend more time at the office than you do at home. And definitely. So the people that you're working with have to mesh well. And don't you want to know that you're going to mesh well with someone that's actually themselves instead of someone who's putting on an act during an interview to show the best version? So that's what I mean when I talk about being authentic. And it's gotten me very far in life, because I think it's the reason that a lot of the clients hire us and want to work with us. I think it's the reason that I have developed friendships with the people I've developed friendships with. I've been lucky enough to meet the woman of my dreams and my wife, and I have wonderful children. You know, I've always been me, and it's always worked out for me. And so the one thing I try and teach to the employees in my office and to anyone that I'm mentoring is to just be themselves.
I think this is excellent advice, and I wish I would have met you earlier, because I must admit that I struggled a lot with that, and not with the fact of, you know, trying to be someone else than I am, because I think, like, similarly to you, just my true self comes out even when I don't want it to come out, even when I'm trying to rein it in. But I think that often enough, at least this is my experience also with mentoring, and when especially when I mentor young lawyers, is that a lot of young people have assumptions, and I had the same. I was assuming that my employer wanted certain behaviors. I was assuming that they wanted a certain, you know, clothing style, that they wanted a certain communication style. And yes, you know, corporations, organizations have specific styles. But I think your message is very important, because there is a big difference between what we assume and what indeed somehow the corporate identity, organizational identity is. And I think for all of us, and especially for those that are growing now, it's really important to differentiate between what the assumptions are that we have, right? That we were taught either because of our environment, our education. So, you know, a lawyer behaves this and this way. If you're a female lawyer, you should behave this and this way. You know, if your background is this, you should behave this and this way. So I think always a reality check and really making sure to understand if it's really your employer who's asking you to work in a specific way, or if it's just you assuming because you're seeing certain behaviors around you that you would like to fit in more easily, and that you think that fitting in is by adapting to that style. And I learned only, I think, rather late in my career, that actually a lot of the thoughts that I had were assumptions, and that actually my employer was very fine with me being, you know, very different from others, and that actually some of them actually hired me because I was different from others. So I think it's very good advice that you give, especially because I think you said it in maybe in different words, but if you constantly have to go to your workplace and cannot be your true self, a lot of your energy goes into trying to be someone else, and hence for the rest. So, you know, even your level of energy is going to be depending on that. And I think, especially now that we know how important it is to have a kind of healthy, you know, relationship to work and working hours and all that, I think if you're already losing your energy by trying to pretend or kind of rounding your corners far too much, your edges far too much than you should, then it's opportunities you lose, instead of, you know, kind of going with who you are. And then, yes, yeah, sometimes, you know, you will be confronted with things that others don't like, but that doesn't change, right? And that's another assumption, like assuming that people will like you more when you behave the other way, where actually someone told me a very simple thing is like, there will always be people who don't like you, and that's fine. That's okay. You don't need to be loved by everyone. But I thought it was really important. Your message is very important to me, because I must say I struggled realizing that I was putting unnecessary pressure on myself to adapt to the organization, whereas actually the organization was totally fine with me just being different maybe to others.
That's exactly right. You bring up a couple interesting points. Number one, that the reason you're being hired is likely due to the differences, not because you're the same. I don't want to work with someone that every time I make a recommendation is going to say, yes, Mr. Lipkis, although that's my father, but yes, Mr. Lipkis, do whatever you want. I want someone who's going to challenge me and going to disagree with me and have the confidence to actually put me in my place if it's appropriate. And so that's obviously with respect to specific files, for example, that we're working on. And I'm learning a lot by being a father. And I mentioned earlier, I have an 8-year-old son, a 6-year-old daughter. She turned 6 this month. And it brings up a really interesting point of what I'm seeing in the personalities of my children as they're progressing through life. And, you know, at some point they're going to be going for job interviews, and I hope at least they're going to come to me for assistance to help them achieve their goals. But what I wanted to mention is that I have an 8-year-old son who is not nearly as confident as my 6-year-old daughter. And so I can see it in them with, for example, he's much more cautious where riding a bike. It's going to take him a lot longer to develop the confidence not to fall off the bike. And they can both ride bikes now, so there's no issue. But the point that I'm making is teaching them at the time how to learn something new was very different. Because my daughter right away, oh, I'm going to fall. No big deal. Let's get on and I'll learn to ride the bike as soon as I stop falling. Whereas my son would do everything in his power to not fall. And so I can see that's just one micro example. But the point that I'm making is they're very different people. And I can see that my daughter will have the confidence and believe in herself from the first minute that she attempts to do something. Whereas my son, it will take time for him to develop the confidence until he feels that he's ready to do something and learn. And that's no different from the assumptions that people bring to the workforce when they're in the interview. And I think that it's very important. And I don't know, I certainly don't know this, how you teach confidence, but the reality is the more confident you are in certain situations, the easier that you can snap your fingers and realize, I do know what I'm doing. I am ready for this role. I think the easier it will be for you to be in that situation. And for whatever reason in life, I have no idea why, and I think about it sometimes, but I develop confidence very early in life. And maybe it's because I work hard, and maybe it's because, you know, on the pendulum that's swinging, maybe it's, I'm not going to say I'm arrogant, but maybe it, you know, swings more towards being highly confident than not. But I think it matters. And I think that the more confidence you can bring to yourself, I think that the easier it will be in certain situations for you to realize I can be authentic and I can be myself.
This is so interesting because now I'm going to, you know, I had other questions in mind, but I think that the statements you're making really are so important to me, and especially to what leadership wants to achieve, that it's really, you know, triggering thoughts, you know, triggering people to talk about important stuff. And I think the confidence element is one that is so important. I'm sure you've come across that in your mentoring relationship as well, because as you mentioned, some of us are just born with more confidence than others, or gain them more easily through their, you know, growing up, whatever. And it's also interesting to see it doesn't depend on the family, because you said it's similarly to your daughter and son. I've seen this in our own family. We are both raised by the same parents, and we think we are very different in respect to, you know, how we, you know, how we present ourselves, how we speak. So there's a lot of connotations that nothing to do with your family and your educational background. What I want you a little bit to dig a little bit deeper is there is so many assumptions right around still today around gender. And you just mentioned your daughter being just more confident than your son is to some extent, right? I was wondering, you know, for me, the pandemic with all its negative things that's brought to us, one of the things that I've been thinking, and often it happens to me during kind of, you know, these virtual calls, where I realized that those people that were extremely confident when they were in a room and where it was very easy to just, you know, make the conversation because they were just like more present than the others, just like because the confidence is stronger. I've seen a slight shift to now the more kind of silent people feel a bit more confident to come out, because somehow the fact that we are all in front of a, you know, laptop and a screen, some people feel kind of more confident to make the comment on the chat or to raise a question on the chat or, you know, to interact. And hence it shifts a little bit the, you know, I wouldn't say power, you know, powers between the team members, but I feel there is a shift. And I'm wondering if you have observed something similar, and if you believe that maybe this type of interaction also gives room and more airtime to those that might be a bit less confident, but that this new environment kind of makes them a bit bolder because it's a bit easier.
I'm really glad you brought that up for a variety of reasons. The most important is what I think the virtual meetings do is it evens the playing field. And what I mean is I'm in my basement of my home, and you can see in the background, I've got my sports memorabilia, little tidbits about myself that I'm showing out there to the world. But let's assume hypothetically that it was like your background where it's just a wall and you're not learning anything about the person by being on camera. What I do know with everyone that I'm on the virtual call with is that they're in their own comforts of their own home or environment. And I think that when you go to conferences, because I've had these conversations with people who are very nervous, and sometimes they'll come up to me, how are you able to get up there and just speak? And you have no notes and you're, how do you do that? And I said, well, it's number one, it's experience where I've done it a lot of times. You have to teach yourself to be comfortable in those situations. I used to be a horrible public speaker. I remember, and I have it on video, one of the first times I ever spoke, I was a nervous wreck and I was sweating and it went horribly, but you do it again and again and again and again, and eventually you develop that confidence. But if we go back to the virtual environment, there's something to be said about being in the comforts of your own home. It takes away one element of what may make someone anxious about speaking. So I think that what it does is it gives them an extra element of confidence to let them do that. And I see it. I see it in our meetings. I see it in a lot of virtual conferences, and I like it. Another point on that issue of one thing that I absolutely despise about going to conferences and one thing that we deal with, and I'm sure you're going to smile when I say this, but you have people, and I'll call it mansplaining because I hate it. You have people that just like to hear themselves speak, and they take a setting of a conference where there's 100 people in the room and everyone needs to hear their voice. And not because they're going to be sharing something with the world that matters, because they just want to be the person speaking. And I think what that does is it causes some of the more shy people or someone that may not have the confidence to speak up, and it forces them to go even more into the hole and not want to speak. And I wish that there's some way in the in-person environment that we can take what we've learned from the virtual, which is, like you said, giving people the confidence to speak or be in the chat, and give those people the opportunity to speak more. And I don't know how we do it. I certainly don't have the answers today, but there's no doubt in my mind that when we're ready for the next in-person conferences and the next in-person meetings, there has to be a better ability for the leaders in the room to give the voices to the people that aren't going to mansplain. And what I'm saying for people that aren't listening are, you know, the guy in the room that just wants to hear himself talk and he takes the air out of the room in the conversation that matters, because, again, in a negative way. And I see too much of it. And so I think that it's the leader's opportunity now, when we do move back to in-person environment, to take the lessons that we've learned from virtual, which I think are very important, and to give voices and give confidence to those who might not otherwise have it.
I think that's, I'm totally with you. I think there is kind of, you know, a democratization of people when we are in virtual settings. It kind of gives a little bit more, kind of everyone feels more that they are at the same level. And I also like it. I think you mentioned, you know, this is an opportunity for leaders. I know that some of the audience is also a lot of managers listen to the podcast. So I would also raise the point that it's also our responsibility to really, you know, go back to the new normal, or, you know, enter the new normal, you know, with an awareness that has shown us that it's possible to work together differently and to give more space to those that maybe don't feel always confident enough to speak up or to make a point. So I think I see it as you. I think it's a big opportunity coming towards us, but also a big responsibility. Not forget that it's mainly, you know, if you are the leader in some type of situation, and being a leader doesn't mean you have to be the manager. It just means that you are leading the meeting. So you can also be, you know, whatever your level is, your title, you can be leading a meeting, and you still need to strive to give more space to everyone, actually. So we have totally diverted from my plan, but which is very good, because it doesn't need to go according to plan always. But we are running out of time, and hence I would like to, raise my last question. And you've shared already a lot, around leadership and around, what your values and behaviors are, that you would like to see, that you strive for and that you kind of want to also give to your children, which I really think it's a nice way to put it. I'm wondering, what is beside being authentic, that is one advice that you give to your mentees, for instance. Is there any other type of advice that you would give young professionals, also bearing in mind what your lessons learned have been in your life?
Yeah, I think if I'm going to close out on any topic, why don't we close out with this? I very early on in my career, I threw my ego way out the door. And I'll give the best example of when I work at, obviously the firm name is Kestenberg Siegel Lipkis, and I work with Michael Kestenberg, who was the senior partner and founder of the firm. And it's Lipkis is my dad's name, not my name, just to be clear to everyone listening. And when I joined that firm, I looked up to him and I thought that he was, number one, the smartest person I had ever met, but also he was so professional and he was so good and he worked so hard. And I saw that from him. And I learned early on from him that you have to throw your ego out the door. And what I mean is, as you develop skills and as you move on with your role through life, you, me, I always thought of myself, I'm no smarter than anyone else in the room. I might work harder in my mind. I might work harder than everyone else. And that's something that I learned very early on, is to work hard and you'll be lucky in life and you'll achieve great things. But most importantly, I never thought of myself as smarter. I respected everybody on an equal footing. And I think that that's such an important lesson for young people to hear, that we are all just people at the end of the day, and we all have varying level of skills, and we have varying levels of talent to provide and perspectives to provide to certain situations. And everybody brings value in different ways without even realizing it necessarily. And so when I go back to the theme of what I wanted to contribute, which is really throw your ego out the door. Don't think of yourself as smarter than anyone else because it doesn't matter. Right? And so I think for whatever reason, people don't realize that early on in their careers. And so I think that it's sort of to bring everything back together with being respectful and being kind. You know, if you treat everyone the same way, and if you don't look at yourself as any smarter or any better than anyone else, you'll do just fine throughout your career and throughout your life, to be quite frank. And if I'm going to give a personal story to tell everyone how I got to this phase, it's as follows. My older brother was top of his class, best grade in any exam he ever took, valedictorian, achieved greatness throughout school. He was an academic, he was the number one. I was not an academic growing up. Did not get the best grades growing up, and I had to work 10 times harder to get a B than he would for his A plus. And guess what? That's okay. It doesn't matter. Everyone brings different attributes to the table. Just because I wasn't as book smart as my brother did not ever make me feel like I wouldn't be able to achieve the same degree of success. In this case, we're both lawyers. We both passed the bar. We both did the same things. He might have had higher grades getting there. Doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme. And so to circle back, and I'm sure there's a lot you'll want to unpack, but the truth is, throw your ego out the door. It doesn't matter whatever you think about comparing to other people. Don't compare. I tell my kids all the time, I don't care what your sister is doing. Worry about what you're doing. Tell my daughter, I don't care what your brother is doing. Worry about being the best version of yourself. And it's the same lessons that I try to teach them that are applicable in the workforce as a manager, as a leader, as a mentee, as an employee. And so that's what I would like to leave with the group. And I'm happy to respond to any questions that, you know, you're thinking about. I see you thinking.
Yeah, because I think it touches again, you know, on so many points that that we've tried to kind of, you know, have discussions about, conversations about in this podcast, and I'm happy that you touch again on some of these points. I think, to me, even for those that maybe still believe, you know, that it is still okay to be an expert in one field, and that because you're an expert and have the highest recognitions in your field, that this makes you very special. You know, everyone can have its own opinion and perspective. I would say life is throwing at us so many challenges that are so much more complex than what we have been used during the last decades. The pandemic being one. That has shown that collaboration is needed across all type of industries, all type of, you know, parties, social backgrounds, whatever. This problem cannot be solved just by a couple, handful of people. This needs to be a collaborative effort. And it's the same in our working environment. The problems we are facing, and, you know, you and I, David, we work in the anti-counterfeiting space. We know that that's not something a lawyer can fix. We know that's not something that a legislator can fix. So it's, what I'm trying to say is that with the acknowledgement that the issues that we are facing professionally, but also just in general, are getting always more complex, I think that the time to think that titles, roles, and degrees will be the decisive element to actually solve something are far behind us. And that actually, I hope that everyone that has listened and everyone that will listen to this later on, is really, it's about, you know, everyone contributes in its own way. And the contribution sometimes can, you know, pass by unnoticed. But it's actually only when you know that one person is missing there, that it's not part of the team, when you will realize that actually you are missing aspects that you actually didn't even think of as being important. You know, who is the person who sets up a good atmosphere during a meeting? Who is the person who raises the questions that nobody wants to raise because they believe they should know the answer because they're so senior? You know, so everyone kind of brings something to the table. And I think it's so important as a message, because that same message is kind of a red line that goes back to the kindness. It goes back to the trust, to the listening, to, you know, so to me, it really is a reminder as to, you know, let's take ourselves a bit less serious, and let's take, you know, others, consider others as important as ourselves. And as you mentioned when you started, you know, if we would stick to the principle of kindness in our interactions whenever we can, and now that we know there is a caveat, I think it's going to be clear for everyone that we don't mean to be nice in all and every situation. But I think it goes back to that again. And to me, kind of the image also, throwing your ego away, you know, out of the window, out of the door, leave it out there. It's such a powerful message, because then what you're actually saying is also, you know, be open-minded, you know.
That's right.
You know, broaden your horizon. Don't think about your own perspective all the time. So very powerful message. I'm not sure if you know, if you want to comment on what I just said, or if I was going in a different path here.
No, I think it really closes out the conversation perfectly, because it wraps everything up nicely. And the truth is, everybody has a lot to bring to the table. Everyone's life experiences that brought them to the point that they're at matters and gives different perspective. And we can touch on diversity, inclusivity, and how important that is. But that's the truth. The truth is, and if there's anything I want the listeners to learn, it's that you matter in a positive way. And I hope that you're able to listen and develop more confidence than you might have otherwise had an hour ago.
Excellent. Well, David, it has been really a pleasure to have you on my podcast. You know, I'm sure that we'll stay in touch, because, you know, we have common interests and sit in the same organization. So, but I would really look forward to finally, you know, get to see you in person again, you know, have a drink and spend some quality time just catching up.
Me too. And just so you know, Mirta, when you launched Leader Ching, I was really excited, number one, for this format and platform for the audience. But more importantly, I was really excited about it. And I'm so glad that you asked me because, as you know, as you know, I like to hear myself speak. So I'm just kidding. No, the truth is
Yes.
I'm honored that to be included with the list of people that you've already had on. So thank you very much for asking me.
You're so welcome, and I'm sure that all listeners will agree with me. You have brought so many, elements into the episode of today that probably we could have gone on for hours and hours speaking about all of those, but we want to make sure that people listen to the episode from the beginning to the end, and that they don't need to have like to take half a day off to listen to us. So thanks again so much, David. It has been really a pleasure, and now I have a ton of ideas in my head that I need to put on paper so I don't forget them.
I'm very glad. Thanks, Mirta. Have a great rest of the day. Thanks to everyone listening.
Bye, everyone.
I hope you liked this episode of Leader Ching in English. Don't forget to give us a thumbs up on your respective platform and subscribe to our podcast. See you soon!